You're listening to KBOO FM, Portland, Oregon. This is Talking Earth. I'm your host, Sophia Hellstrom White. I'm here joined by talented local poet, Caitlin Carlton Barnes.
Hi.
Hi. And haven't heard her read in a little while, so now we're going to treat all of you in Radioland.
Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure to hear you. My personal connection with Caitlin is she did, I guess it was her live reading debut.
It was
at New Poet Challenge a couple years ago, and it was a fun time. And she's one of those people I don't think I can ever get, like, she should be on every single reading in Portland. Like, no matter what.
That's generous. I wanted to say thank you to you too, because reading with you was in fact my debut, and it got me, it was like, I'm very shy, so I didn't want to share, and you guys let me do that. So
it was, you were one of, you know, our favorites as far as the people we got to read live. So so let's get you to reading, I guess. We have this talented poet, so we're like, let's get you to poetry.
Exactly. So I'm just going to do a block of poems from They Say. A revised edition should be up for sale by Christmas. Anyway.
A chapbook of yours? Or a book?
They Say is a revised version is going to be out. And then, yes, another one. We haven't come up with a title for that, and by we I just mean me, but it should be out by Christmas as well.
Oh, well, can't wait. Besides, when you say we, it makes you sound like you have big grouping publisher around you.
I should have just left it, right?
Yeah. Leave it royal we. Sort of. Yeah. We are not amused.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right.
Okay, so I'll start out with carcinogens of choice. Carcinogens of choice. We all have got it, some kind of malignancy. How I go about mine is damn well up to me. What's a few less years, a few more crow's feet, some whiskey in my voice, so I go ahead and light up again and delight in carcinogens of choice. And this one is called Piggyback. I said, you can't wear my bones on your back. You said, they don't weigh much. But my mother says, I have lead bones. My dad calls me thunder thighs. You said, then I dare you, see if you can, wrap me in thunder and sink me with molten lead. And so this next one is where the misanthropes are. It's a little bit out of character for me. It's somewhat different, but I don't know. It's one of my favorites. So where the misanthropes are. Take your pens and your fists to the darkest alley streets, the backest alley dives, bathroom wall clues and dirty stalls to where there are misanthropes to find in secret rooms circa 1932. They've covered the walls with the in-betweens you missed, scratched them frenetic and mad scientist speakeasy style truth. They found stuck in the teeth of holy lying books just before they were driven from their minds by X multiplied equals nothing but why not. They'll pat you on the back, say they hate to break it to you, but there's no equation, no product to find that'll square it, reason it, make it right. Nope, just time to pick your poison. Don't let them do it for you. How's about something nice and dark that burns going down?
Yeah, where the misanthropes are. It's like an unfortunately forgotten Marie Sendak novel. Children's book. Where the wild things are.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, dumb joke.
You're absolutely right. I never even noticed. It's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. So the next one is I Know, and that's the title poem, and they say, I know. I know why the down-the-street witch prefers cats and won't leave her house. I know why Mr. Ernie kept Vietnam in his wheelchair, candy cigarettes for the neighbor kids, and waited for us to come to him. Why misanthropes keep what they know to themselves. Hermits prefer alone, and that kid down the street stopped talking. Why Mike blew his head off, why your mother drank herself, yellow and dead. I know why outcasts are safe, fringe society stays frayed, and cult leaders sound so pretty. Why runaways love needles and black tar forearms, why the corner man has the best conversations by himself, why your daughter hates you, why they didn't find Dave or his body until it started to stink. I know why cats hunt snakes in the grass and never come home, why your houseplants lost the will to green, why dogs bark at night and wolves howl at the miles between them. I know when my dad cries, when his heart gets too warm, my mother never does, why my brother stiff arms the world and why my son can't sleep in his own bed. Why you cheat, why she doesn't leave you, why my husband won't yell back at me, and why still sometimes I'm afraid of him. I know why little girls pretend to be asleep, why honeybees have quit their job, and why those forced to 9 to 5 have quit their souls. Why they turn the meek into monsters and the weak are a threat to them. Why women are crazy, men are angry, and why there is no one and everything to blame. Why they make the inconvenient take pills, why this poem could never end, why you've stopped reading, and why I don't blame you. I should maybe qualify the why women are crazy. That's in quotes on the paper. And men are angry. That's also in quotes. So sure. That's how it should be read.
I was hearing them with quote marks. Yeah. But, you know, it's like.
Because when I read it, you've seen me read it. I always do like the quotes.
Yeah. So, I was like. Yeah. You know, but it's good to clarify that on radio. When people listen to poets, they're listening for a reason to get angry anyway.
Oh, okay.
Basic rule of thumb, yes. I think.
I agree with you, but yeah. Okay, so this next one is If You Must, and let's see. If you must, please, if you must, bring up your fists and scream and scream and scream all the things that need hearing. There's a street corner where no one has ears, just down that way. Yeah, most of my poems are pretty short. I know it's actually pretty long, but so this is called Fucking Poets. And I actually, it was sort of inspired by Bukowski and like Barflies and
those kind of poets.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, ones that hang out at the bar and really.
My early experience was at most of them, so it's
yeah,
like...
I mean, I torture myself. I tend to do it not at the bar, but, you know, I think that's that's a normal poet thing. But, so, yeah, fucking poets. It's all the seeing makes them neurotic little shits. Terrible drunks, too. Their beloved words forever walking out on them just when they've got something to say. And even when they can find them, it's always in some shithole Helen-gone place no one's ever heard of. And then they try to give you directions in a language no one speaks. But they just keep at it over and over, writing their heads into brick walls. Kills them every time. Lifespan of a housefly, poor bastards. So I almost didn't make it through that one for laughing. But
yeah, good job. It's like I was laughing a lot on the inside because yeah. I know so many mini Bukowskis. Like, yeah. I want to call them Microkowskis.
Right. Well, there's another Bukowski reference in here too. So
sweet.
Just wait and see. Okay, so this is She Drinks. She drinks. She drinks because fuck you. She drinks so she doesn't have to keep track of the double standards anymore. And at the end of the day, if her friendly is an excuse for rape, hell, she'll drink to take the blame for that too. She drinks against the sad. She drinks to toast the joy. She drinks to make him pretty, and she drinks to take him home. She drinks because there's a kind of meditation and a quiet morning gathering of clothes. She drinks so that, should he pass him on the street, she never has to know. She drinks so she can sleep alone. She drinks so she can find a reason to drink. And so this next group of poems, I call them the dad poems because they are inspired by my father.
Who is a renowned local poet, I believe.
Correct, yes. Our relationship is somewhat estranged at the moment, but he's the reason why I am a poet. You know, I grew up with Leanne and Steve and, you know, Angie and Joel Marino, or not Marino, excuse me, Heidel. They're not poets, but they are artists. And like, I would go to be at their parties and I'd be like 6 years old and it'd be, you know, the old fashioned typewriter would come out and we'd all do like a group poem and I would be included in that, you know, and I guess I have been on the radio before, I forgot. I had made a little chapbook out of just like string and like hole punches and there was like a a radio show. It might have even been this one that my dad had me call in, and I was reading my poems about like my cats and slugs and stuff. So yeah, so I forgot I have experience doing this. So this is called Minds of Men. A world's knowledge mastered at my mother's expense. He took to stages, framed with captive audience, pontificated his craft for accolades and applause, amassed pretty ideas in pretty books in his own handsome head, repackaged them on more pretty paper. A dictator with a pretty title, he gifted them to his people as if it'd never been done. On the aisle of nothing left to teach me, where the world remasters the minds of men.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. Let's see. So this is called For the Birds. I don't write birds because my dad wrote them a lot when he was losing his edge, when he no longer fought for anything but the afternoon and a glass of wine, feet upon his new deck chair he found for a great deal at Freddy's, waking from naps to refill his glass, unless he could get my stepmom to do it, and then he would write about her ankles. But today I could write a poem for the birds. Mm-hmm. And then this is called Boy Wonder. This is in reference to my dad's dad died when he was 5 years old. He did the screenplay to School of Rock, I want to say. Oh. And he was blacklisted in the McCarthy era and had to drive a cab, caught polio, and died. And then his mom, who was a beautiful writer as well, her book Morning Shows the Day, she's got some other ones, but that's the only one I've been able to find, is gorgeous. And she had bipolar disorder and struggled with that. And so it's sort of a vignette of what I think that might look like. But Boy Wonder. Only 5 when his father died. How does a little boy make sense of blacklists, polio, and mothers who've gone mad? How does he tell the books meant for burial from the ones that stay on the shelf? How does a little boy understand why she's gone, where the outside locks its doors and the paper cups serve pills? Why she promised him she'd save the world, and why she never will. My dad has a lot of stories about when she'd be manic and she would have all these ideas about saving the world and what they were gonna do. And he was too young to really understand why that. I mean, he always felt that was a good time, like it was a happy memory. But looking back, it's not so much.
I had a bipolar mom too, so I get that.
Instead
of saving the world, though, she was like, "I'm going to get rich."
Yeah, I mean, save your own world versus everybody else's world. Yeah. Exactly. And again, with a Bukowski reference, this is called His Best Bukowski. My father does his best Bukowski, all red wine teeth and rage, bared against ideals he once fought for drunken argument's sake. To cut the jade an inspired man suffers when his soul no longer lives paycheck to paycheck, when he no longer stands up, objects conscientious against war, indiscriminate death, or the right all men should possess to grow their hair long. Yeah, so...
So are those bound for an upcoming chapbook?
Or I think so, I guess.
Like,
I've been putting this one off because it is very, you know...
It's really personal.
Yeah, it's... And I've been trying to come up with a better title than The Dad Poems, but, like, it might just end up being that because...
Oh, it's like, I know a lot of people will buy them just for that. And it's like, yeah. You know, because it's like... That's one of my experiences with art is like, you know, you can either like when it's at its most appealing is like when it's vague or when it's like so personal you think someone's bleeding on it.
Right, exactly. So. I'm not very good at vague, so yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see. Titles are the hardest part for me of anything, but
You can just call every poem Untitled Number One.
I want to, and believe me, before I titled every one, basically just the first line of the poem, they were that, you know. But I've been title shamed enough times to where I just can't bring myself to do it. I should stop listening to other people. You're right.
Well, yeah, my wife, like, for a while when she was writing poems. It's like for a while she went from calling them untitled to just like, this poem is called "The Titles Are Stupid and I Don't Need Them."
This is titled "I Can't Think of Anything." Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I gotta stop giggling. Okay, this is called "The Best Thing." So the best thing about you leaving, about someone leaving your life forever, is that all at once you're allowed to forget the bad stuff somehow. And if that's what it takes to remember you this way, as the person I thought you were, then I am content to pay the price of never hearing your voice again. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's just in general, you know.
Sure.
People can leave many ways. And this is called Left Behinds, and this is right after my mom and dad got divorced, and my brother was too young to stay the night with him. It was just me and my dad for, you know, a few years. And this is sort of what I remember of that. So Left Behinds. He's forgotten the after divorce leftover brown liquor duplex. Countertop covered in amber dregs at the bottom of small glasses I'd finish for him. Put them in the sink, stack them into towers, and see how high before he'd take one off the top, and without a rinse, he'd pour a fresh, wet amber cheat and leave me with all the left behinds he forgot. And to this day, when I throw back three fingers of brown, I never leave a drop. Yeah, there was always, I mean, yeah. I thought it was really cool. But
oh, no, I wasn't saying it wasn't. Yeah. I was just absorbing it.
No, I mean, when I would stay at his house, oh, there would be like, you know, there would be the little bit at the bottom of the shot glasses and I would finish them, you know. I don't think he knew that, but I thought it was pretty rad.
So. Oh, yeah. When I was 7, my grandpa, like, he was going to get me a birthday present and he forgot. And he's like, well, you're old enough for your first drink. So what? he took some of my Sunny Delight and put vodka in it. So
that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I think everyone needs someone in their family to get them drunk, like underage drunk. Yeah. It's
when they're still like Sesame Street age.
Yeah, like 10, whatever. It's fine. So the next few poems are sort of more feminist, you know, empowering women.
Certainly need that.
Yeah. So this is called Stagger Home Alone Roulette. Sometimes I like to make a low-cut top, short skirt, 5-inch high-heel wager. Drink way too much until much too late, and then go for a round of Stagger Home Alone Roulette. Play chicken with the truth and dare humanity to prove me wrong. And that, I wrote that by now. I know, so depressing. But I wrote that after, you know, it was like two things. I was just walking home from a run. You know, I wasn't dressed in high heels or anything, but I had a truck sort of follow me home. And that was scary. And then, you know, it's just sort of two ideas put into one. But
oh, I mean, I get the feeling, having transitioned, it's like a different experience from like, you know, dude with a fedora and sneakers as opposed to, you know, like this. It's like the world automatically changes on you. It's like you're ready to be a target sometimes.
Right, but I think you probably have a lot more insights than I might even, because you've, you know, been in both places. I mean, I'm so used to it. I've internalized a lot of it. I don't even really notice.
Sometimes it's fun to like be experiencing things for the first time, but you know, that isn't, it's just like, you've been in circles of where, you know, some people are thinking on the other end of that.
So. Yeah. And you have to sort of take more things into consideration when you go out and.
Yeah.
But do those things.
Sorry to interrupt. It's just like.
Oh, it's okay.
And I'm like, oh, I get it. I feel it right in the, right in the estrogen.
Nice. Feel it right in the ovaries.
Right in the baby maker, I don't know.
So this one is called The Science of Growing Gorgeous. I think I've read this at one of your things. So The Science of Growing Gorgeous. If what they say is true and the most beautiful people are the most broken, then I am a fucking goddess. King, queen, prince, and princess. I've earned my station, built my throne, made my crown by choosing the shiniest pieces of every shattered version of me. Each sparkle of my eyes forged from the darkest moments, every peal of laughter keeps them in mind. Even when my heart is light, I am still my own Mary Shelley, Dr. Frankenstein genius, who simply figured out the science of growing gorgeous from the things that killed me. More cuss words.
Awesome. Yeah. When this airs, it'll be after 10 p.m., so go get it.
Okay. So this is called Glass Blown Men. This is a newer one. Glass Blown Men. You can infer that. He's the same 285-pound, 6'4" eggshell of a man he's always been. A real-life Humpty Dumpty, clinging by his fingernails to the crumbling reign of his glory, to college football and a time when he still had hair. Pecs instead of breasts, when his fists were allowed to solve things and no one cared how many noses he broke or that he beat me. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, how he laments the good old days, the way all glass-blown men do.
The good old days defined as being not old and not good.
Well, that's, you know, I mean, that's
for them.
A
yeah.
snippet of my ex-husband. Plus, I hear a lot of with 45 in the White House mm-hmm. about make America great again. Let's, you know, when the good old days and
right.
There's no such thing. And so
there has never been good old days.
Not so. For women and not for yeah. anybody who's not a white man. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's see. I think we're moving into maybe things that aren't as blocked out in terms of theme.
Then we'll just float along.
Okay. Yeah. So this is called 2 in the Afternoon. I tell myself you're nothing, not this warmth in my stomach, the setback of my shoulders, the crooked in my smile, or the looking forward to it hips. And when you pretend to love me, your mouth against my neck, and I let you do things I've never let others do, I tell myself it must be the three colors in your eyes multiplied by the blue in mine that equals this woman I've never been at 2 in the afternoon. Okay, maybe these are more like based on like dudes.
Like that's dudes. What we'll call this.
Yeah, the dudes.
Maybe dudes.
Because I'm sensing a theme here. So some of this is based on my experience. A lot of it's based on my friend's experience. Like, but I, you know.
You are entering the dude zone.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Okay, are we ready for this? All right, here we go. Come with me. I dreamt again of laying on your chest, encased in the always of your arms, surrounded by books, magazines, and maps, and you turning the pages of our someday's faraway places. My eyes closed with the sound of your voice reading them to life. From deep inside your ribs and your heart beating, come with me, come with me, come with me. Watch the sea's sandfire sunsets. Hear the oath sunrise makes only to the highest mountain peaks. Let me, from first worlds to third, love you in every corner of the earth, just once.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that should be whispered onto a perfume commercial. Can I?
Come with me. Yeah.
You know, perfume. Dudes.
Dudes. Yeah.
By Calvin Klein.
Dudes. I mean... Yes. I'm picturing the commercial now.
They're always black and white and like make no linear sense.
Yeah. I mean, lots of shirtless guys. Yeah, for sure. I mean, just saying. Okay, so you can't make me laugh. I mean, you can. Please do, but... Okay, so this is called Your Fade, and I think it was... There was one point where, like, you are in love with someone, and all of a sudden you are, you know, you break up, and it mm-hmm. seems like it's never going to get any better. And one day you just, it just doesn't hurt anymore. Mm-hmm. But I was never consciously aware of the moment when it was happening, that transition was taking place from, like, hurting to not anymore. And then one time I was, and this is what came out of it. So, I woke early to feel you finally go dark. So I'll lean back on my hands and mourn your fade just this once, cross-legged in the sand on a Mexican beach at dawn, and recall you only until the sun comes up. So.
That's always the strangest of the sensations, where mm-hmm. it's like, you know, and for me, it'd be like, when it's happened, it's like I'd be in the dumps for months, and then it just felt like a sudden distraction, where mm-hmm. it's like, something happened, and I'm like, oh, you know.
Yeah, and you just feel better for a while, or, yeah. you know, at least that hurt is gone, yeah. you know, or it's just more far away.
Find something new to hurt you. It's like
the I mean, isn't that the case, though? It's not usually, one thing, it's another.
It's like there was this old movie where a guy's shot in the arm, and Damon Wayans says, you want something to take your mind off that arm? And so he breaks, like, his fingers.
But you don't know what movie? I feel like I've seen it somewhere.
Major Pain, yeah.
Oh, that's not what I was thinking of.
You want something to take your mind off the arm? And he breaks his finger.
Well, now I'm going to have to watch it.
And it's like, and the guy's yelling, ow, my finger. And he's like, works every time.
Exactly. I don't remember that movie. I feel like I've seen it, but I can't remember.
It was directed by the guy that played Michael Myers in Halloween. It's Nick Castle.
What?
He played Michael Myers, and then he got a long career as a director of children's movies. Last Starfighter rocks. Cool. Yeah. So
I mean, who says you can't reinvent yourself?
Yeah.
I know. So this is called Masterpiece. Masterpiece. I will not know poems until you've penned yours inside me. I will not know prose until we've written pages and pages by calling out each other's names. And I will never know poetry until the morning I wake to you and the masterpiece we've made of us. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Now this one is called Golden Ratio. This is definitely about my husband, because he is the most adorable little nerd you've ever seen. And I'm going to read it for you. Okay, so Golden Ratio. He says, if you were an equation, you'd be the golden ratio. And I want to listen, but his hands are covered in scars and calluses of the hardworking kind of patience I've never mastered, filtering out the drip of his voice, the old-fashioned red bandana in the back pocket of his blue jeans cuffed at the bottom, the wolf in his eyes and the crow's feet that prove the kind of man he is, the way his hair begs me to run it through, the fade of his black t-shirts when they pull just so over the muscles that swing a hammer and paddle out past the breakers where he searches for the ocean for meaning and the good waves, and the wet salt kisses that say, see, I came back safe. 1.618 is the numerical representation, he's saying, but I can only watch his lips plump around the math, so I silence him with a kiss, the power of gold. Mm. Yeah, because he's a little bit long-winded. He's got lots of facts to say, and I just think he's the cutest thing when he talks. But do I listen all the time? Nope.
Well, that's just a sign that you're married.
It was like, I mean, it's been like that since the beginning, but
sure,
he's cute. So,
well, I mean, God, that's definitely my marriage. There've been times where it's like, you know, one of us will talk, and then we'll stop for like 10 minutes, and the other one will ask, are you still here?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, I'm right next to you.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, he's my opposite, but I think that's why it works. It drives me crazy, but why it works. Mm-hmm. This is Wine and Smoke. And it's actually, there was a lot more poem that went before this, but I figured, like, the rest of it I wasn't really happy with, but this part was cool, so. Wine and Smoke. A tipsy halfway writer, half drunk or half on fire, in a world already too full of would-be poets, wine and smoke. Mm. So that was written after I'd had a few too many and I was smoking cigarettes and drinking wine, obviously.
Tends to be how a lot of poems are born.
Right, drunk, edit, sober. Was that Hemingway? I don't know.
It's attributed to him, but
Yeah.
But since like writing was the only time he didn't drink, he probably didn't say that.
Oh yeah, I didn't think about that. Yeah, I think I've read that it actually was someone else, but I can't remember who.
Yeah, it sounds more like Mark Twain but to me.
Yeah, but. Mark Twain's got all the good one-liners, dude. So many fridge magnets just of Mark Twain quotes. let's see. Let's do this one first. This is called Chasing Different Dragons. In the Novocaine weeks, we mistook for love, we broke. Through writer's block walls, filled our minds with nothing but the need for each other and the words that filled our veins in perfect combination. When we could not tangle our bodies, we spoke the ways we would. When we could not speak, we scrawled our minds manic, pen and paper desperate to find the inside of one another. Until we mused each other numb, smothered the fire we lusted after, left each other cold, used and alone to chase different dragons. So this one's If You Were a Book. And I briefly dated a guy many, many years ago who was really pretty, super pretty, but man. Anyway, we didn't date for long, so.
Being pretty didn't help.
No, he wasn't super smart, but, you know, you got to do some of those. But if you were a book, if you were a book, you'd be a harlequin. All feathered hair and to run fingers through. Gentle taking of hands, locked gazes, slow lean-ins for soft kisses that deepen into clothing stripped off one piece at a time. All taking of me into your arms, shielding me from beasts, carrying me over dirty roads to protect my delicate constitution and feet. But I hate romance novels. I like taking my own clothes off all at once or just lifting my skirt, fucking anywhere but a bed of pillows and satin sheets. Don't lay me down, push me up, give me 5 minutes of hard and fast against a wall and be done with me. I have already finished with you. I didn't realize how many cuss words were in these.
Well, again, it's after 10.
It's poetry, guys.
Yeah.
This is called Love on Paper. Laying on your chest, my coffee resting on your stomach, your hands turn the pages, fingers point out all the bright places we should be together. Their colorful gloss lives the same way we do. Our love, so pretty, on paper.
Sounds better than the book.
What?
I said, no, that sounds like a better experience than the book.
Than the actual book, yeah.
Yeah.
This is called Spent the Night, and it's just a night that I spent most of the night with a friend out on my stoop in my old house, just drinking and smoking cigarettes and watching the night go by. Spent the night. Spent the night, heads thrown back, laughing at nothing at all. I told you to be careful of your wine because I can see your future. And when you spilled it, you told me you were just being polite, sharing it with the ground so it could roll it around on its tongue and drink with us. And we stayed and stayed out there on the stoop, frozen fingers forgetting to smoke our cigarettes. For so long, we became storytellers. Across the street, the crackhead he tells them to, debates the unseen, hands slicing the air with critical points, arms thrown up when they fail to be made. Until the world turned to early, and that's late even for us, so we agreed to let him have this one, went in and left him alone to ramble in the privacy of the street. Set aside our glasses, laid down our heads, and shut our eyes to the first gray light that dared us fall asleep. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. Sometimes there are ones that just happen all at once, and you don't really have to do a lot of work to them. And they just sort of end up being awesome.
It feels like they never happen enough, frequently enough, though.
Nope. Yes, and sometimes you just have to let it be for a while and come back to it. Let's see. So this one is To Be a Vampire. And this is an old one. I don't know. I almost didn't conclude it because I was like, but we'll see.
Back when people wanted to be vampires, it seems like Twilight killed that.
Yeah. You
know, like nobody's like, look at Edward Cullen and be like,
I promise I wrote this before that. And yeah. I promise.
started it.
What?
Never mind.
I mean, partly I have always had, I mean, the people listening can't see me, but I have always had these amazing fangs. Yeah. And so, you know, Vampire Girl has been something that people have called me for a long time, and I'm not upset by it at all.
Sure.
I like it. So this is called To Be a Vampire. When silence is asleep, I'll spin us in a lover's vortex, bind sinew about your head, about our heads, so our breath can be together. Study the ovals of your eyelids, twitch above hazel dreams. Spend every witching hour examining your profile from every shadow of your room. Hold my tongue and inhale instead at the edges of your blankets to keep close the long moments I spent here. Hold my mouth, my tongue, my teeth. Hover just shy of your neck and long to be a vampire. So for 1,000 years, I would walk your mind.
Mm-hmm. Much better than Twilight.
Thanks. Thank you. That was the correct answer. So this is called Shut the Fuck Up Kiss. I want to slap you in that mouth of yours for the way your tongue slips past your teeth when you say yes to me. For the smart-ass circles your lips work around all the make-me-laughs. Want to grab you by that face, shake the head that holds the mind that dares to be bilingual, and despise myself even more when I lean in for a shut the fuck up kiss instead.
Aw.
Just killing you, aren't I? let's see.
Poor Patrick, this is...
we already read that one, I think. So... Oh, this is actually a They Say poem, I think, too. The Way Love Dies, we'll do this one. My husband rests his hands lovingly around his beer at the head of the table, red-faced and waiting for his dinner. Set down in front of him, he leans over his plate, chews vengeance into his food. Breath heaves through his nose, in, out, and in again. Love dies this way. The children have made a dinner time game of who can sit the longest, pretend the best to eat, resist the need to vomit as they watch him cheat death with every ingest while the rest of them try not to suffocate. Love dies this way. The wife knife and forks her meat into tiny pieces to keep her mastications quiet, premeditates each intake so she can keep them down, so she won't slit his throat in a bid for silence and an end to evenings spent cooking food the husband refuses to choke on. Love dies this way. Yeah, so this is, that is from many marriages I've witnessed over my, like, friends, you know, growing up. Just.
Oh, I've totally seen those,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, people just not happy to be together anymore.
Yeah.
Right. And how that makes the whole, you know, house feel.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's the average experience of, like, you know, when you have a best buddy and you're going to, like, spend the night over there.
Mm-hmm. And the parents have seen you enough to where, like, the wall...
Yeah, the facade falls
mm-hmm,
away.
Exactly.
You know.
I don't know. It's, let's see. So this is called Little Brother, and my little brother, Gabe, I call him Gab because I'm a big sister and that's what big sisters do. But, he grew, you know, he was a chess club mathlete, you know, wore 49er sweats. He's going to kill me. actually, he won't. He's going to be fine. 49er sweats, shoes, like shoelaces, hats, I mean, underwear, everything, you know, and he was the most adorable little nerd. So, anyway, I grew up defending him a lot. And sure. So that's what this is about. Little brother. Grew up with violence in my teeth. A weaponized tongue, jawbreaker elbows, swung bloodletting fists. Heel toe, knee-busting feet, my baseball bat book bag kept 4 textbook deep. Ready to rain down all the evil a girl can summon from the world. For those who would do harm to his bright blonde mind, in my dark head, I kept a beast. So, yeah, I beat up a lot of boys.
That's one of those nice moments to reflect on, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I used to arm wrestle for money at lunch in middle school, you know, but then they get stronger than you, and then that's not as lucrative.
You just have to hit the right period.
Yep. So this is, my husband was working out of town, I think, when I wrote this, and it sucked. The hope drives me mad. Always blamed the winter without him. The cold crept in, slow losing me my mind. But it's the hope, the bright possible sunshine chance to have him warm against me again that may truly drive me mad. Let's see.
This is like the fun part, or all of it's been the fun part, but you know, it's like when you're like searching for something and you get into this like static energy of the reading.
Is it?
I've always enjoyed it, like listening to it and that kind of thing. Oh. Like
waiting to see what's going to happen next.
Well, just, it's like a different energy. It goes from like someone, you know, planning, and it becomes, you know, where it's just like portrait to like this lovely chaos Jackson Pollock kind of painting with words and random poems.
I've never thought of it that way. That's a good way to think about it.
I've been to enough poetry readings, you have to like find an optimistic viewpoint of
these things. For this, when the person reading's like not ready to read the next one.
You know, you're doing great, but you know, it's like, and I've been one of them before where it's like I'd be reading a poem and my handwriting is terrible, so I'd be like, what's that word?
Yeah, well, I mean, my handwriting is extra terrible. I wouldn't dare come here with written, like, stuff written in my own hand. But, yeah, some of these I haven't, like, I mean, I went over them, obviously, because I was coming here, but a lot of them I'm less familiar with after, you know, a while. Yeah. I worked on some of them for a minute. And this one's called Not Enough. So, there's not enough rain in Portland to wash the sin from your mouth. No springtime rebirth could ever begin anew enough to wipe our slate clean. No summer hot enough to burn your words from my skin. And no Oregon winter's long repent could make me forgive you, love you, or want you again. Mm-hmm. That was clearly a breakup. I don't know from who, though. I'm just like, memory lane.
You'd be like, I don't know who you were, but...
Yeah, but I was pretty... So this is called Between Kisses, and this is about a friend of mine who passed away recently from Hep C. He was a heroin addict, and we met when I was like 16. That's like the Garden. Do you remember the Garden, the underage dance club? Anyway.
I don't know if I was here when that happened. So
Okay.
I moved here when I was 21, and so that was...
I was 16, so that was like, ooh. We won't talk about that, but...
We don't need to date ourselves. Like, I had a dance club, but it was in, like, rural Oregon. It was actually... They converted, like, a large barn for...
I mean, whatever works, as long as you have some place to go.
Yeah.
But he... I mean, I had five friends. They were all drunk. I was trying to take care of them, and... I think, you know, he came up and was like, you need some help? And I was like, sure, because I do. And then he proceeded to drive two cars, like, a lot of the way to Carlton, where his grandparents lived. His drive, run back, drive the other one until one of us sobered up enough to... Yeah, so this is called Between Kisses. He still sleeps in my bed with me. Forever 16, we gave each other things no one else would. Told each other the truth in between kisses we lied to, spent our nights pretending okay existed, and the mornings remembering it doesn't. And this one is a poet's call to arms. It feels a bit naive to me, but the sentiment is a good one, so.
Yeah.
We will not stop writing until the world sounds the way it should, remembers everything it needs to, and all the things it would rather not. Until language is spoken in equals within our books, on our televisions, online and in our streets. We vowed a witness to stand, to document, to remain the world's conscience. We are poets. That's another quote, poets are the world's conscience. And I forget who says that too.
I can't remember it right now.
Should have Googled it before I got here.
My Google flu is weaker lately.
Google what?
My Google flu. You know, like martial arts. It's like with a computer.
Oh no, I'm going to keep that in my head and I'm going to steal it from you.
I probably stole it from someone, but I'd have to Google it to see who I stole it from.
Okay. So this is called Drive-By Smile. I may have actually read this one before. I don't know.
Well, if this is your first time on the radio, since, you know, you were a little kid, it's all new to
It's all new to Radioland.
Yeah.
So this is about a neighbor who lived up the street. I was like 13 and he was like 21 and his name was Mike and I was super sure I was going to marry him. He was very pretty and awesome and I loved him. But he, anyway, so this is Drive-By Smile. Let's not over-explain things. Yeah. You drove by smiling, pointed at your chest, made a two-finger barrel, held it to your head, pulled back the hammer with your thumb, and the next day you were dead. So, yeah.
Ouch.
I know. He did actually commit suicide, but, yeah. So, and he really did drive by and do that. So it's a pretty formative thing for, like, seventh grade. Yeah.
Yeah, I bet.
Let's see. This is called, You Say the Dead Tell the Truth. Set the flask of warm reds unsmoked on a bench in a cemetery where, you say, the dead tell the truth. Where the leaves roll by on rounds among the headstones' dead dates, checking them against the records in their veins. There lives a passed away caretaker's cottage where no one takes care, but the moss chews carefully at the slant in the roof. We kissed carcinogens, sipped until our fingertips lit the between us, and heard the dead witness our in love, and it's dying. Mm-hmm. There is one.
I'll save you time and tell, like, half remember a dad joke. I can just tell it while you search.
Yeah.
How do you know the dead never tell the truth? Because they're always lying in their coffins. I'm so sorry, listeners. I was doing it for a good reason.
Let's see. This is called Still and Silent. I am most silent when screams live in my chest, tears close my throat, fire consumes my mouth, and silver coats my tongue. The most still when my gut has only one word of advice. It repeats over and over, run. And my mind can think of nothing, not one convincing argument against it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just, you know, that feeling that you get when you're just like, I want to be anywhere but right here.
I've had that.
We all have. Lot. Yeah.
And you're exceptional when it comes to, like, writing. Like, my personal opinion is, you know, you're exceptional when it comes to writing things we've all been through, but it also sounds uniquely from your perspective. So
thanks. I appreciate that. I mean, that's what poetry is for, sort of. I mean, to figure out your own stuff and then help other people maybe figure out theirs.
Yeah.
Put into words some things that are hard to quantify. This is called Homecoming. This is all also about Mike, my neighbor. And it's just, he came home from the military, and this is part of that. So, homecoming. Decorated and buttoned down, white hat and white hands. End of days setting hot on clean cornered shoulders, heavy with marine-colored gold. Shadow-faced and uniform tall, he stands practicing ghost for an afterlife only a soldier can see. Mm-hmm. And then... this is called... this page. This page marks the last thoughts I will have of you tonight. I refuse to lay awake to you, fall asleep to the recall of your voice on loop. I'll allow you no more of my dreams. My arms will not reach for you or wish themselves around you. I am not empty with your absence, nor will I fill at your return. Tonight, I refuse to love you.
404, page not found.
Yeah, exactly.
I am terrible tonight.
You're not. You make me laugh. It's good. This is called Stalk the Late Night, and this is an old one, too. So, let's see. I stalk the late night streets, the dirt dark alleys, listen careful to the beware dog's bark, hear the walls fleck their paint, and the no trespassing signs show me where to find the people rough, shoulder to shoulder, meet my eyes and defy with the right kind of smile. Go ahead, put your hands on me if that's how you want it to go down. Instead, let's say you and I share a drink, and I'll let you tell us all the story of us and how we came to be here tonight. Mm. And that's another one where, you know, walking late at night as a woman, I am fascinated by the seedy parts of life. You know, I like to walk around at night and just, you know, but there's so many places that we're not allowed to go, or that you would feel stupid for venturing, you know, late at night. Yeah.
For me, it's like, you know, clicking at the heels automatically feels like it's an accidental cell phone call to the curious in the wrong kind of
way. Yeah, yeah, it is kind of. I mean, it is, yeah.
I mean, so. It's unfortunate that
you know, it is have unfortunate, to think but it's the truth.
Yeah, I think we're gonna go like 4 more minutes.
And okay. Yeah.
Okay.
That's perfect. I don't have a lot more anyway, so let's see. This is called Ginger Snaps, and this is just about a friend of mine and I were messing around pretending we weren't adults. So we swung on that set of swings like we were Huck Finn and Friends, saying things like Ginger Snaps and Huckleberry. And it was like we were kids again, seeing who could get closest to the sky. Except nowadays, they make them so safe. You can't twist too tight or too high, and there ain't no chance in hell of touching the sky. But that didn't stop us trying, remembering what it was like being young and dumb, double dog daring the wind. That night I dreamt vivid of a time it wasn't so hard to take your short, bright life in your own two hands, miles and miles up from the ground, head just missing the clouds.
Those were the best times. It's like, especially if you're like 80s kids, which, yeah. You know, saying too much. It's
when
like,
safety didn't like yeah. Yeah, dampen your fun, exactly.
It's like the schools couldn't afford new swings, so they were all like...
Yeah, I mean, we used to do like cherry drops, you know, and like, yeah. I mean, just the stuff that they would...
Yeah.
What you do. Let's see. This one is untitled. So, there it is in the way we pitch each other spiteful. Sharp and in your face. It knows the way we fight tonight. The reason for the war we wage over the cutting board. Sever your head and serve you my heart until our lips bloody with promises never to cut one another again until the next time we file our teeth. Mm-hmm. And then this is called Pinup. A bath of bubbles, lavender wine drunk, and quite Monroe. Knees and nipples for the peep show. A drowning of scented breasts in a candlelit baptism. A born again pinup repents in the nude.
Oh.
Yeah. That's...
How about one more? And then want to do one more?
Yeah, let's see. Let's do Kiss of Consumption. So he met her mouth as if her lips were red with the wine from a sun-drenched vineyard instead of a dying thing on a bed of misfortune and filth. He watched her drown and loved her for suffocating death so gracefully, laid his head down on the red stains she left and vowed he'd die with her, legs wrapped around his waist, hips still soft in his hands. He pressed the love warm of his lips to hers long after they were blue with death. It is said he lived the rest of his days in his lover's farewell kiss.
Beautiful.
Thanks.
Thank you, Caitlin.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Caitlin Carlton Barnes and Talking Earth. And KBOO FM. I'm Sophia Hellstrom White. Thank you, listeners, for listening to us. And to Patrick Bocard, who's long-suffering engineer or a Cookie Monster. It's like, thank you, Cookie Monster, for editing. Me want cookie. Anyway, have a good night, everyone.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of In the Blast Zone, a panel on tar sands by rail on Tuesday, January 21st from 7 to 9 p.m. at Patagonia in Portland. In 2018, the Zenith Energy Oil Terminal opened, the first tar sands by rail export terminal on the West Coast. The Center for a Sustainable Economy hosts this panel discussion with activists fighting tar sands by rail in the Pacific Northwest. Again, that's In the Blast Zone, a panel on tar sands by rail on Tuesday, January 21st from 7 to 9 p.m. at Patagonia, 1106 West Burnside in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm. On the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2020 Portland Mochitsky Festival on Sunday, January 26th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Viking Pavilion in Portland. The Mochitsky Festival celebrates the New Year by sharing Japanese-American culture with the community. The festival features hands-on activities for all ages, cultural foods, vendors, and a wide variety of demonstrations and performances, including taiko drumming, Japanese dance, storytelling, mochi pounding, martial art demos, and much more. Again, that's the 2020 Portland Mochitsky Festival on Sunday, January 26th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Viking Pavilion, 930 Southwest Hall Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Dosed movie screening on Saturday, February 1st at 3:30 p.m. at Cinema 21 in Portland. Dosed is a documentary about a young lady who uses psychedelic therapy to overcome her addiction to heroin. After the show, there will be a panel discussion featuring members of the cast and production. They will be taking questions from the audience. Again, that's the Dosed movie screening on Saturday, February 1st at 3:30 p.m. at Cinema 21, 616 Northwest 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Katie Jane and the Celtic Light Orchestra performance on Saturday, January 25th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Community Music Center in Portland. Katie Jane and the Celtic Light Orchestra combine Celtic music, interactive lights, Irish dancing, and fun. Pre-show attendees are invited to participate in the Magical Music Petting Zoo, where they can touch and play instruments that inspire the creative mind. Again, that's the Katie Jane and Celtic Light Orchestra performance on Saturday, January 25th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Community Music Center, 3350 Southeast Francis Street in Portland. This is an all-ages show. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Portland, community radio for the Pacific Northwest. Right now, the following program may contain language and situations not suitable for young audiences. But of course, it's the bedtime radio show for grown-ups, Gremlin Time.
Good evening, this is Fortunato. Tonight, I kind of